Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hey everyone, my name is Matt Weston. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. And tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest one of them all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, yeah, I'm looking for my beer. Which seems totally apropos, doesn't it?
I can't believe it's actually working right now. It's just unbelievable.
It sounds good, too. That's wonderful. I mean, I wonder if, yeah. Sorry about that. If next time I'll just call in using Skype.
Yeah, I think last time we tried an episode, and the problem was that they were doing updates or something as we went on, and everything is messed up, and we have different numbers and all that. And I guess I sound really pretty too, which is a good thing, which has been the first time this ever happened. But anyways, this is very happy. This is very good. This is huge. This is great. This is awesome. This is gonna be the best podcast ever.
This is huge. But, hey, we know the best people who do podcasts.
We have a very great podcast. I know the podcast is great. It's the greatest podcast ever. But did you know that NFL football will actually be happening again in 1 month?
Well, not only that, that's the real football. We get a little fake football to entertain us in the meantime. Isn't that exciting?
Well, yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Well, I know that you're really busy.
don't break the phone with your enthusiasm.
Well, I know you're really busy. And I know just like the way I kind of consume sports or whatever is I'm not like – I don't really kind of feed on like every single tweet or every like little snippet of information. I kind of try to focus on larger picture and kind of more important things because I feel like very little things are actually important in hindsight. And so I just try to focus on things that I think are being important. Usually those aren't, but I try to focus on more broader things. And so – first, I kind of want to talk about some of the ideas that I came up with there. I think it would be very important for this off-season thing or this training camp, things that we should focus on. And after we talk about what I think, then we'll see if you have anything to kind of fill in the blank space, anything that may be very important I forgot. So does that sound good?
That's well.
Yeah, you broke up for a second, but... Hello? Can you hear me all right?
I can. Can't believe we're doing this again.
Hey, yeah, you sound better now. Can you hear me okay? I think it's the internet. God damn it.
Still
yeah, I'm here. Okay, you sounded better just when you said that again. Can you hear me all right now?
I can.
All right, so we're okay again now. I guess we just hit some turbulence, and let's hope we can edit that out. So I'm sorry if you're listening live. All right, so I guess the first thing I wanted to talk about was just J.J. Watt's health. And he had back surgery, I guess a few weeks ago after he had abdominal surgery and groin surgery. And I looked at the numbers the other day, and he's played from like 88 to 92, 94 to 96% of defensive snaps. And they've gone up every single year. And I think he's the only player, he's played the most percentage of defensive snaps. Jerry Hughes is the only player in the NFL who played any more snaps than he did with two more. And it's just kind of like taking its toll. He hasn't missed any games. And, all these hurts are actually starting to turn into surgeries. And so the biggest one is his back surgery. And it's speculated that he should play in week one, but he'll be out for 10 weeks. And so, BFD, do you think J.J. will actually play the first week of the season?
If I were a betting man, and I'm not, I would say no. I don't think they're going to rush him back. Well, it would be great, if he can, and, rooting that he will be. You're talking about not only your franchise guy, but the biggest player in football today. And I think that unless you are just 100%, confident that he's not going to go out there and hurt himself. You're completely confident that he's not going to go out there and hurt himself. And I think you have to rest him until you darn well know he's ready to play. I haven't seen any details as to what the back surgery was, like what kind of surgery, what exactly he had done. That would be interesting to know as well. But even if he had just a discectomy, something small, that's a pretty big freaking deal. And that is scary stuff. And there's no way, I mean, you know, J.J. Watt's a bad man, but even a discectomy is a big freaking deal. So, you know, you can't push those sort of things, and I hope they don't.
Yeah, the only thing I saw is that it was to repair a herniated disc. And, I mean, if he misses week one, it's against Chicago, then it's Kansas City at home, then at New England, then home to Tennessee. And so it's one of those things where if they can come out without Watt 2-2, that'd be very good before they go to Minnesota, and then Indy, and then at Denver, and then playing Detroit before the bye week. And so those first eight games are pretty tough. And if they can go 2-2 without Watt, and hopefully Watt plays and we go 3-1, kind of start off hot before they actually play Indy, you'll be very valuable. But you know, I don't think he's gonna play. And it's also just kind of strange where this defense has been, you know, top 10 four of the last 5 years. The only year it wasn't was that disaster in 2013. I think last year they finished sixth in DVOA, and from the Titans game on, they were the best defense in the NFL. But without J.J. Watt playing, what would you project this defense to be? I know we'll talk more about Football Outsiders projections later, but right now they're projecting them to be the 10th best defense according to DVOA. How far do they drop all of this without Watt? Do you think the Houston has like the 15th best defense, the 25th best defense? Where would they fall in without him there?
But here's what J.J. Watt does. Is you line him up against the weakest guy in the team. That's why he's been playing so much left end, is that you line him up against the slower right tackles on the phone. Line him up as a true captain in a 3-4 base. You always have to account for J.J. Watt with at least two guys, right? You can't let anybody handle one-on-one, so you've got to account for him with at least two guys. And so you're already, if you don't have to cap your left end anymore, with two guys, that's one guy more available to block. That's one guy available who can go out in the pattern instead of leaving the, you know, what we saw in the past couple of years is running backs chipping them on the way out, on their way out of the backfield. You can't do those things anymore. And you put two guys, unless we're going to get some quarterback on any rare pattern, Clown finally, you know, starts to get the sacks instead of getting the hits. But you know, the fact is that Clyde has not gotten the sacks in bunches, and Merciless is the only guy on the team right now who has shown a pattern of being able to do that. So I think if you look at what the team excelled at last year was forcing the quarterback to throw the ball quickly, and which team, like the Chiefs, were able to take advantage of in the first week because of Alex Smith's short midterm accuracy. So you have these teams. Them throw the ball quickly. They have to throw the ball quickly because nobody wants to get hit by J.J. Watt. And now you just give him two and a half, 3 seconds in the backfield. They've got 4 to 5 seconds in the backfield because there's no J.J. Watt and there's no other real threats. That is a little bit of a bigger problem. You can't cover your receivers long. So I do think that we go from the 10th to the 20th, 22nd best defense in the league. I think we clearly go to a deep below average team because all of a sudden, again, you can't take the best guy in the NFL, take him out of your lineup, even if he's 1-11 on your defensive squad, and expect to really stay. I mean, who else do you plug in there? Christian Covington? Go ahead.
Yeah, that was going to be, you know, who do you think is going to fill in there? Before I get to that, there's just some numbers that I saw. The Texans had the third best defense without pressure last year, and so they have the same secondary. And it should be even better because Andre Hall has been playing the entire year at free safety. So maybe, like, pressure isn't as important for the defense in some way, even though I don't know exactly how you measure that. But also the Texans last year they were sixth in pressure rate, 27%. And then of their hurries, J.J. Watt had 51, Whitney Merciless had 20, Clowney 18.5, and then third from there was John Simon with 9. And so without Watt there, you know, for 4 games or whatever, you're losing, you know, 6 or 7, 8 hurries right there. And that's a, you know, that's a big difference as far as pressure rating go. And even sacks, he had 17, Mercilus was second with 12. And so I don't even know really how you even measure how much of an impact he does, because even the run game, you know, I wrote about also the other day, is that the outside linebackers force things to the B-gap, and that's where Watt, you know, takes advantage of plays. And they had the second – they had first against runs to left tackle, fifth against runs to right tackle because of Watt. And now with Christian Covington and Devon still there, what do you, you – that's not going to happen at all. You'll probably be 15th or 20th there. And you're putting more pressure on Cushing and McKinney to make plays. And so without Watt there, what do you think – who do you think will play defensive end? Do you think it's just me, Brandon Dunn, Pagan – Covington, and just still rotating in and out constantly? Or do you think any of those guys is actually a legitimate starter who would play the bulk of the time in any of those positions?
I think the only guy who's got a chance to be a legitimate starter is Covington. I'm not sure if he's really his best position, but he's really fourth. So it's really hard to like these guys as far as you're not getting the replacement. So what is that you hope to achieve by replacing JJ? The best alignment is 8 sacks a year and you know, the equivalent pressure. And what is that you're really trying to do? That's your other thing, 6 sacks, 10 sacks a year. You're de facto losing 13, 14, 6 because they ain't J.J. Watt.
Yeah. Well, are you worried at all about his long-term health, adding on to that?
Yeah, definitely. Back surgery is a big deal. I think Gerbil Logic can attest to that. I guess he probably had a discectomy. You compensate for it, and then other things get break. It's just like the integrity of an aluminum can is the way I like to visualize it. The can's great, but my first in, and then it's just done. And so I do worry about his long-term health because that's his back. That's a big freaking deal.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other thoughts on the Watt injury, or just, I guess, to summarize is that you don't think he's going to play week one. This is very big and very important. And the Texans may be the 20th best defense. In addition, is there anything you want to add at all to that?
I would be a pleasure to be wrong, but I'm a little bit pessimistic on this one just because if it's that, it's a back. I mean, if it's, you know, mm-hmm. he broke his arm. Okay, no worries. Broke his arm. Big deal. He's waiting until he can take the impact. Different types of injuries, but the back is a core part of the body.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at the season, I'd be hoping he just kind of sits out the first 4 games because, you know, you are playing Chicago, who's not going to be very good. You're playing a New England team without Tom Brady. You're playing Kansas City, who will probably win that game against Houston, even if he plays, and then you're going, and then you get Tennessee. And so you have 3 very winnable games without him, so there's no point to rush him back too soon, have him re-aggravate something, and then actually you have problems for the rest of the year at all. Moving forward. And so, I mean, he may end up playing week 1 just because it's J.J. Watt, and that's what he does, since he doesn't miss games. But as far as the entire 2016 season goes, I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to go about things.
Yeah, agree.
And so moving on, well, Buck Oswald, I guess, is the other kind of big thing I was MLB watching for. And with him, I don't think we're going to see a lot of objective praise at all. I think everything is going to be slanted in a positive light. And so I guess, you know, it's important, I guess, though, for a new quarterback to read things. Like, he's taking command of the huddle. He's making the correct calls in the line of scrimmage. He's developing chemistry with this player, that player, even though I assume we're going to read those no matter what, whatever the truth is. But I think it's become more important is if we actually read anything negative at all from any of the, you know, Houston bourgeoisie media personnel, because they really won't say anything negative about. But we've actually get some of that then that might be something to be kind of worried about. And so I know the Oswald over here thing, like he's holding onto the ball too long. The offense is taking some time for him to for it to come to him. Those are the sort of things I'm going to be looking for, just because that probably means more than anything positive with Osweiler. What are your thoughts on him here in this training camp? Is there anything specific you're looking for from him between now and the end of the month?
I would love to see clips of him, and obviously I can't go to training camp because I live in Austin, and that's just impossible at this point in my life. But I'd love to see where his mechanics. This he's been working on the mechanics. I've talked quite a bit and extensively about his low arm angle. Hurts his accuracy, hurts his arm speed. I'd love to see him going tall and fall in training camp and in the preseason. If he's going tall and fall, I'm going to get pretty daggum excited pretty quickly. To me, that's a huge him. If that's his accuracy, what is his truly skills a quarterback, a lead quarterback needs, and he doesn't have one if his mechanics are better. So the big thing from him I'm going to be looking for, the arm angle. Is the ball coming out of his shoulder? Like he's got like a shoulder thingy gun? That was terrible. Or is he coming up over behind ear, coming down with the arm and down? That's going to be.
Yeah, and we have a question from Run to the Sun. Are you worried at all that Brock Osweiler is not going to work out at all? Or are you kind of more optimistic after watching Brett's video and watching some film on your own and kind of thinking about it more?
I agree with Brett on this one. I see with the accuracy and with the arm strength. I think the key to offense that you're able to cover stuff up, those weaknesses up, and I can point to successful years as an example as to what Gary Kubiak can do with a quarterback with a weak arm. Bob wants a quarterback that's got a stronger arm and is more accurate, roughly speaking. Okay. It's not everything's not blast. Bob wants more arm strength. He wants a guy who can push the ball downfield a little bit more often. He hasn't been able to do that, with this current crop of quarterbacks, and we see what a disaster clusterfuck it turned into when he tried. But look, Ryan Mallett was there for reasons because he had the big arm, and that's what Bob wants. And I don't think that Osweiler has that big arm. And it'll be interesting to see, the game one. We're not going to see Jack, and it'll be interesting to see the table in the preseason, and especially game one.
Okay, yeah, I can agree with that. I guess kind of for me, I'm just going to be mainly looking for, like I said, I haven't seen anything negative, and I'm also kind of interested to see how long he holds on to the ball, because I know he that's one of his tendencies. I think a lot of it's just his size with how long his body is, and also you kind of being younger, not starting for an entire year, making those quick decisions, and also he's going to be a lot less of a structured offense with Bill O'Brien too, where he's going to have to make a lot more decisions on his own rather than, all right, you're running the play action, look, this route, then this route, then this route, and everything's really structured in that way. And with it being a lot more freeform, if he's having problems making decisions, if he's taking that much longer for, his brain to click, it's even bigger of a deal in Bill O'Brien's offense than it was in Denver last year, where he already had issues facing it. And so that's going to be the biggest thing whenever it comes to Oswald I'm going to be looking for as kind of like the very early part of the season.
Yeah.
Now the other thing on here that I think is very important is just the return game. And this really doesn't make any sense to me. So in 2014, the Texans were 27th. This is without Marciano. This is without Kubiak. This is with a whole new draft class, a whole new group of UDFAs, a whole new group of kind of sneaky free agent guys to play special teams. And then last year, the Texans were 32nd, and then they fell in special teams again. The only thing that they actually gained any points on field position at all were kickoffs, even though Novak was the kickers for whatever reason. But they were terrible at punts, terrible at punt returns, terrible at kick returns, terrible at field goals, and they were 0.4% behind San Diego for 31st place. And so this year, it's just kind of absurd that this keeps happening. But one of the problems is that Keith Mumphrey, Cecil Shorts III, and Quinn Demps all returned kicks last year. And Keith Mumphrey was the primary returner, which is just unbelievable. And so this year they had Will Fuller, Tyler Irvin, Braxton Miller, Wendell Williams. These are all possible candidates to actually return kicks this year. Which one of these guys do you think actually overtakes their kick return duties? And are you have any feeling at all that they may actually get anything out of their special teams this season?
I think there's a lot more reason to have hope. So when you look at the list that we had returning kicks last year, you had old safety Quentin Lambs. You had no speed wide receiver dude, Keith Mumphrey. You had Cecil Shorts, who, you know, my 9-year-old could be beating a foot race.
He's Alpha Blue of punt returns.
Oh. So he's all, I mean, he's slow. He's slow at this point of his career. It happens. Wide receivers get slow. It's a thing. So you have two old guys and never had the talent to return. And that's a big freaking deal. So now let's, by the way, for those of you who've been listening to the show for the past 4 or 5 years or however long you've been listening to me verbally masturbate on Battle Red Radio, that we've been complaining for years about the lack of down roster talent, especially the lack of down roster speed, is that we would go out in the world and we pass up on anybody who remotely had speed, anybody who could help in the return game. And it's been like that for years. I mean, the last guy we drafted with speed to return kicks was freaking Jacoby Jones. So it is an important element of your team to have some sort of threat. Now, how important are special teams to the roster, the returns? I don't know. I don't know how to quantify that. I'd love to have the time to figure that out. But it's a thing you have to address. And so when you look at the talent this year versus last year, we finally – since Jacoby Jones addressed the lack of speed or skill positions that isn't named DeAndre Hopkins or Andre Johnson, right? So who I think it'll be to actually answer your question. I think the two guys who are going to jump on me are going to be Tyler Irvin and Braxton Miller. You're not going to be able to sneak either of these guys through to the practice squad, at least. It obviously depends on what happens during preseason. Both of them have some serious hits. Miller is no any song. I really think Urban's the guy who I want to win that. He's got a. You're not going to have your first. You know, I really don't think. I think that'd be a really nice decision. The other guy is the other running back on a roster whose name I'm completely whiffing on right now. The guy who likes to kill quarterbacks. And Wendell Williams, the dude who ran the. And then there's Wendell Williams. He's the dude who ran the 4.1840. So it's a completely different look. And I got to say, it's the first time in a long time I've looked at the special teams and gone, damn.
Yeah, and I guess we can go ahead. And I was going to just say this for the end, but Football Outsiders, for their projections, they have the Houston Texans at 1.3% is their projected DVOA in special teams this year, which is ninth. And so their project made the jump from 32nd to ninth in special teams. And I don't really see like a big reason all about it other than Shane Novak may not be the kicker anymore because of that guy with that crazy last name and also a lot better returners. But I mean, just like a 23 position jump seems really high for me. I could see maybe them being average, but not be above average and be top 10 in the league. Does that surprise you at all? Do you think that leap is even possible?
I hadn't gotten that far in the write-up yet. So for those of you who we didn't tease that out, we have a copy, thanks to our old friend, Rovers McLean, that we have Ball Outsiders Almanac so that we can do some Q&A sessions with them. And Tom Gower, who is a baby eating sister fucker blogger, is a one of hopefully had him on, but this dude knows his football, and he says some very intelligent things of his right. He's the best dudes. So we have an advanced copy, so we know how Football Outsiders is ranking all this stuff. So what do I say? I think number one, you're going to have a lot, and I think as Lawrence Person asked the question, do I think the fair is some kicking duties? And my answer is, God, I hope so. His old crappy ass out there again, and you can watch the DVO preseason FOA preseason ranking go from 9th to 20th again. Shane Leckler was a disaster. I hope he can't do much worse, which is not a compliment even back, but just the speed that we're adding on Keith has home run ability now. At least you aren't going to have a home run ability with Keith Monfrey or Quentin Dempster.
Okay.
So you can actually be a little optimistic on the upside and say, you know what, maybe ninth, maybe there's a chance.
Mhm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a crazy jump. And another question Lawrence Person had was, do you think not bringing a punter to compete with Shake Leckler was a bad decision? I think so. I know FO had the Texans that they lost 15.1 points off punts, and if Leckler's not the majority of it, he's at least half of it, And he was really bad last year. And I know he's cool, and there's no way he becomes a Hall of Famer, I don't think. But he's cool. He's from Houston. He comes out with a yellow belly in his hand, and he kicks the ball around some, and is like the fourth string quarterback. I get all that, but he's just a very bad punter. And he's like Vince Wilfork. Vince Wilfork's a bundle of joy, but he's not a good football player. And Leckler was a big part of why the punting game was just so horrific last year. And so I think it's one of those things where you have a veteran and you don't want to bring competition because you don't want to hurt his feelings, and you're also already paying him a good amount of money. And so it's just kind of weird that if you're trying to win games, and when you have numbers now to back up this information, to just stick with a guy like that. So I think that was kind of an issue. I think if Novak's not there, the field goal kicking should be better. They should actually get touchbacks on kickoffs, which is kind of a given this year too. And with the improvement in the return game, I can see it as being an average special team, but I don't think I'll ever live to see the day where the Texans have a top 10 special team units. I just think it's too far of a jump, in 1 year. But, we'll have to see as far as that goes. And so the last thing that I thought – it was kind of very important entering this training camp in preseason was the 2014 draft class. The biggest reason why is that this is the third year for these guys. They need to stop being more than just compliments to other players. They need to be key contributors and just stars on this team by now. The first question I have is that there's that group of Jay Prosh, Bedorowicz, Ballantyne, Pagan, Savage, and Blue. And that's those six guys that haven't really done anything at all. They have received playing time, but they haven't been productive players or really any good. BFD, do you think there's any chance that any of these guys becomes a viable player? And if you had to pick one, who would you pick?
So are we allowed to pick from we're talking about that bottom of the
– the 2014 class.
I think the guys that I would look to that will contribute – or I'm sorry, guy – is Lonnie Ballantyne. I think we knew that he was going to be a development kind of player. We knew that he was going to take a couple of years anyway. One thing he has that the other guys don't have is this thing. Every year in the draft is draft new guys who are low. And so Prosh, Blue, these are guys I talk about that I get so riled up about. Why are we drafting out from Blue for crying out sake? Anyway, so Ballantyne is the exception to that rule. He has speed, he can jump, he's quick. And so he is somebody who actually has the ability to get on the field, make a difference from a physical standpoint. So any of those Ballantyne.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess I could see – I can see Alfred Blue staying in the league playing special teams. I can maybe see Tom Savage being a third-string quarterback. I don't know enough at all about Ballantyne, but I just know these guys are good, Jay Prosh doesn't know who to block and he can't block. Fedorowicz can't catch and he can't block. Pagan's just he's just the guy. Like, he just sits there and takes up space. And Blue's a plotter, and he's already received playing time, and he was one of the worst running backs in the NFL last year, and the worst running back in the NFL in 14. And then Ballantyne, he just hasn't played enough to really know what he has. So I just don't see any of it happening. I guess that there's a very slim chance. But if it's going to happen, it needs to be this year. And if it doesn't happen this year, you could see maybe all six of these guys off the team potentially, or five or whatever, depending on how this year goes. And I think these guys are going to be NFL players, so this is probably going to be the biggest year of their career. So other than
I'm forced outside to do the show, and it's still hot out here. Sorry.
No problem. Yeah, so other than those six guys, we also have Xavier Sufio, Jadeveon Clowney, and Andre Howe. And those are kind of three guys that I wanted to talk more about. We'll start with Xavier Sufio first. Last year, he didn't start until the Cincinnati game. And then from that point on, we talked about this a lot last year. I know I wrote about it. summer, you know, their training camp offensive line was Newton, Brooks, Jones, Sufio, and Brown. And that unit needs to play all together until Cincinnati because of injuries, lack of production, having to move guys around. Whenever they actually all started, you know, they were very good. And Sufio went from, you know, kind of unplayable his rookie year to, you know, pretty average last year. I mean, his biggest issue was that he missed four-fifths of a block, but the athleticism was there and the strength was there, and he just looked he looked a lot better. And so he's had another offseason this past year to get stronger, to, you know, become, I guess, more of like an NFL-sized body. I know he was kind of skinny whenever he came in as far as offensive lineman goes. But with him, it's just kind of refinement. And, again, this is, like, his third year. If he doesn't have the refinement this year, what are you going to expect from him at all going forward? And so do you think this is the year that Sufio finally puts things together?
You're right. We a lot of draft gold for him to take him in that spot for him to not be very solid contributor. He's flashed a whole time. And then I've got to think of a better nickname because I can't say either his initials or his real name. So, you know, hopefully he finally does put it together, but I haven't seen a light turn on for him yet. You could see the light go on in Derek Newton. You could see the light shining with Brandon Brooks. I'm starting to sound like I'm doing a political speech. But you could see those things in those guys, and I have not seen that in Sufio.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he misses just one part of the block, and, you know, he'll have a great double team, but he'll lean at the linebacker and miss that block, and then the back gets tackled for 4 yards. He'll have a really great punch, but he'll punch outside the shoulders, and then the defensive line will go through his chest and pressure the quarterback. You know, it's just little things, head placement, how he takes his steps. But everything else will be really good. It's just that refinement, the next thing. And so, I don't know, I mean, I like what I saw from last year. I think this year he's going to be really good, and I think it's just going to be another year of an off-season training, another year of training camp, another year of playing next to, you know, Dwayne Brown as well. And, you know, I think if he just – it's just that one little bit layer of refinement, if he takes that next little bit step forward and is able to make five, you know, parts of block rather than four, I think he's really good. And everything that I saw last year and just the I guess the logic of that, I think it should happen this season. And I think he could become an above-average guard finally for the first time. The other guy is, you know, Jadeveon Clowney. You know, we all know so much about him, and we've talked about him, you know, a ton. And last year his numbers were he had 4.5 sacks, 5 hits, 18.5 hurries, 6 disruptions. But he also played 562 snaps during that time period, and he played in 13 games as well. So with him, it's always kind of just been health. But aside from health, though, BFD, is there anything that you see in his game that's a hole? Is there, you know, something that he needs to add to his game to become a more complete player? Or is it just simply he needs to stay out there and he's just going to be, you know, a monster and destroy the league?
Yeah, another, you know, theme that I've hit on a lot here on Battle Radio is that the number one skill an athlete can have is the ability to stay healthy. Everything else is secondary. So with Clowney not being able to stay on the field again, only 13 games last year, and he missed, you know, roughly speaking, about 320 snaps because, you know, he sat in other games too. So he's not out on the field, and if you're banged up, you're not going to play at your max either. One of the things that we talked about is that on our listserv that we have is that Clowney checked in at 265 this year versus 285 last year. That, you know, he's lost 20 pounds. Defensive end, as a defensive end at that weight in a 3-4 base, is he strong enough to set the edge? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think he can still set the edge 265. So this is 265, get him to the point where he has that extra half step, where he's got two moves as a rushing defensive end, especially when he's lined up on the outside nick and sub packages, is he's going to try to either take the step outside and duck inside, or he's going to try to beat the speed. Now, if he's losing 20 pounds means he can turn that shoulder, get down a little bit better, and get underneath the left tackle, then, hey, we might have a little something-something here. So I'm actually a little bit optimistic that, number one, he's hopefully healthy, and number two, losing those 20 pounds makes him a little bit quicker. And a little bit quicker It's not like he needs to go from 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. He just needs to be a little bit quicker than, you know, where he's like, you know, he's been 0 to 60 in 10 seconds. He needs to be 0 to 60 in 9 seconds. Hey, that's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
That beats the tackle. That beats the guard. So that would be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of one of those trade-offs where I think the difference in Clowney's strength between him and the average right tackle, that's a much bigger gap than I guess the off-ball quickness between him and the average right tackle. And so I think he had the ability to give up more strength for speed, because I think you can always, you know, whenever you're edge rushing, being faster is always a much better thing necessarily than, you know, being stronger. And so I think that trade-off is really great for him, because he really didn't make all that many plays around the edge. And whenever he did, it was because he wore off the ball immediately. He never really ripped around the outside shoulder or swam, then played and he got flat, you know, like the Robert Quinn sort of move. You never really saw it from him. If he did without the snap, it was him just kind of running right past the guy, and it only happened very occasionally. Most of his moves that he got pressures on, it's on, like you said, where he takes that step outside, comes inside, and just powers through that tackle. And my favorite play he had last year is against New England, where he Deacon Jones the right tackle and pops him in the face and then just throws the guard down and sacks Tom Brady. And that was kind of like the oh my God moment for Clowney last year. That was incredible. But, you know, like you said, the most important skill of an athlete is to be healthy. And that's what it comes down to, Clowney. Whenever he's healthy, he's really, really good. And last year he was really good. And it's just coming down to if he can play, you know, 730 snaps like Merciless did last year. And then, too, that whenever he's not playing, it really hurts the defense, because if he's not playing, then you have John Simon. And Simon took 639 snaps last year, which is, you know, way too many. And during that time period, he had 5.5 sacks on 9 hurries, which is kind of mostly just like picking up garbage in that way. So if he can stay healthy, I mean, I think he has the potential to be a, you know, Pro Bowler at least, and then be knocked on the door of the All-Pro just because he has that skill level and athleticism at that point. And again, it's going to be health. But he did say he stretched a lot more this year. He didn't hang out with DJ Swearinger as much. He did a lot of yoga. And so, you know, those are all three very important things that are important to you. Maybe the fact that he can actually be healthy this year.
Yeah, maybe just not being around Swag Boy will help, because, I mean, there's no way that with the habits that Swearinger had, that was at all a good influence on Clowney.
And I also wonder how injured he was actually in college, too. And I think maybe the microfracture surgery can take more than a year. And also, I think he was banged up in college a little bit too. And so maybe it just took him some more time to get healthy. Maybe this is the best health he's been in since he was 14. Who knows? But, I mean, I kind of think of, like, if he's not healthy this year, I don't know really at all what you can expect. But you keep him on the roster, you keep trying. But as far as extending him for the future and him becoming an asset to this team, that opportunity is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah, and let's look at it this way. And you hate to be so pessimistic, but Clowney has not been healthy for a football season since his junior year of college. So his senior year was a nightmare. He lost his entire freshman year as a pro. His sophomore year, okay, flashes, okay. I you know, there's also the Chiefs game where he had a couple standout plays that were very, very cute and flashy. But that's 3 seasons. You know, that's a long time to go between being healthy and being not.
Yeah. Well, I think also one of the key things, too, what you just said is that's what we expected from him after that micro fracture knee surgery. And last year, we just wanted to see flashes, and we saw that. And so we're not worried all about his athleticism or his potential being hampered anyway. And now it's like this is the year for him. It's kind of a real make or break year in his third year being the number one overall pick. The other guy I want to talk about is Andre Howell. And it's pretty incredible that their seventh round pick was the best draft pick out of this class. You know, if you had asked Mike, they would just say Clowney probably. And I think Andre Howell would probably be like, you know, maybe fifth or sixth on that list of who'd be the best player out of this class. And he's just been, you know, incredible. And I mean, he changed that defense around last year by him being able to go from the center of the field to the sideline. It allowed their corners play a lot tighter, which lets you more aggressive defense, a lot more bad passes. And guys will be able to play the game like the way they do. You know, Joseph's more of a press corner, Jackson is, Johnson is. They're able to play, you know, how they want to. And they also force a lot more interceptions. I know Howell had 4 and became a starter. And I know 3 of those are all Bortles, and one was in the Jets, but he was just remarkable. And so I'm really excited watching him play this year for an entire season. Really, you know, I'm ecstatic to watch this defense actually play that they should play, for, you know, 16 games rather than the 7 games it was or the, you know, 8 games or so it was last year that worked out. And also, I'm excited to just watch him, you know, get the recognition he deserves. I think he's become just kind of a revelation this year, and I think a lot of people are actually going to know about him, you know, pretty early on this year. And, you know, it's pretty remarkable kind of how his career has turned out. And I think the best thing Brett's ever wrote or he's done was, you know, hitting on Andre Howell, you know, like in 3 weeks before the draft occurred or whatever. But I love him. I'm really excited to watch him play this year. And I think he's going to have the potential to be, you know, one of the, you know, best players on this defense this season.
Yeah, I agree. It's really it's that ability to play center field. You can't overstate that because we had, you know, we've had such slow safeties recently. And you know, Bernard Pollard was allegedly fast, but he could run into a brick wall pretty well, but that was about it. And Andre's got the hips to go along with that. Now, the problem with that is that Hal's only like 5'10", 185. He's not at all big. He's not very strong. And I don't know if I want him to get bigger or stronger because I don't want to lose him. I don't want him to lose that ability to cover sideline to sideline. So you took a cornerback with 3'8", 4'4" type speed. You made him a safety. That's not a bad idea. I do that, and I've done that in Madden every year for the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Or in NCAA football, you just take athletes and they become 9-9s after 1 year. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what helped you is, you know, he was bad as a slot corner. He couldn't jam at the line at all, and he couldn't cover bigger receivers. And so he would get beat after 3 steps just because you have to be able to jam to play in the slot. And they would just also throw to the top of him. But just like his speed, his ability to break on the ball, and his recognition is just, you know, remarkable. And so, yeah, it's been a whole lot of fun watching him play this year. And I always get excited whenever you go through the threads for the training camp stuff, and I see any tweets that, you know, where he's picking up Brock Osweiler, because I just love it. And I think it's going to happen a lot this year. I think he has the potential to, you know, pick off 8 passes or so in 2016.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to also make a comp is that Glover Quinn. Oh my God, I'm tired. Glover Quinn. I think it's a great comp for Andre Howell. There are just some guys who play better with their face to the ball, face to the quarterback playing safety, rather than their back to the ball playing cornerback. And that's Andre Howell is that guy. He's like Glover Quinn was for us. Is that we took Glover Quinn 2 years too late, in my opinion, moved him to safety, and look what happened. His career exploded. And that's, I think it's the same thing with Andre Howell. They're different guys. They're different strengths between each guy. But some guys are just better equipped to play one way and not play the other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, too. Do you have any other macro points that you're looking for until the season starts?
No.
Okay.
We've gotten a lot of questions tonight. I thought we should definitely leave some room for questions.
Yeah, we have a lot of viewer questions, and we also have a lot of quick questions I have. So I think I have some viewer questions. I'm going to ask you a small one, or one of these quick questions I have. So are there any players on this year's team that you kind of – I know you don't want to wish any ill will to anybody, but is there anybody at all on this team that you think needs to go and that should be cut after this, you know, training camp?
I'm not as passionate about any player this year as I've been in the past. You know, Sawyer and Jarrell was down on last year. Who else am I thinking of? There's a couple of guys over the past couple of years I just fiercely wanted off the team. You know, any of our crappy linebackers that we went through for a couple of years there, they were always at the top of the list. We got rid of all of our junky quarterbacks. No more Brian Hoyer to deal with. That's great. Even though it's kind of weird wanting to cut Brian Hoyer when he's been named your starting quarterback. The only position that I can really think of that I would just love, the entire position, it's just not the player, the entire position, is I'd love just to take our tight ends, cut them all, and go find somebody. Everybody except for Steven Anderson, who's been turning heads, or Mark Anderson, I'm sorry. So let's just go, let's just cut all the other tight ends, I'm sorry.
I think you go 203, you know, 2 running backs, 0 tight ends, 3 wide receivers every time.
Yeah. Just let Anderson do it. It's Steven Anderson. I was right the first time. Steven Anderson, let him do his thing. Cut the rest because they all suck. Just get them off. I'm just Don't get them off in a good way. Get them off in a bad way.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few guys for me. I don't want to see Keith Mumphrey there. I think there's too many receivers as it is. I'd rather see Wendell Williams on the team. I'd rather see LeSean Jean on the team than Keith Mumphrey. He just doesn't offer anything at all. There's also too many fast running backs for Alfred Blue to be on his team, too. He's a plotter. He doesn't make anybody miss. He doesn't have very good vision. And so far in his last 2 years, he's received a lot of carries, and he hasn't done anything with them at all. I wish that they drafted somebody so Eddie Pleasant would have to play that, you know, nickel linebacker or hybrid sort of role, because he doesn't have the size to play in the box, and he's not that good at coverage. But they're just really using by there at all on this roster. And then, you know, I think you can get rid of Fedoritz as well, too, possibly, just because he's just not a good blocker at all, and he's such a liability when it comes to catching the ball. And also, with him, we see a lot of his passes kind of go high, and they kind of sail through his hands, and it can maybe lead to some turnovers. I know he missed a couple pretty closely, but the biggest guy for me is Mumphrey, because he doesn't offer anything on special teams, as we saw last year. And also, there's too many wide receivers that were selected for him to really be worthy of a roster spot.
Yeah, I don't think on Mumphrey's. I hope Mumphrey's got a good agent, because he's going to need it.
Yeah. And so I guess going to this question from Sacrifice for Team, he said that this fit the most talent Texans have ever had in camp. And he was saying that there's a lot of guys that he really likes that are probably going to get cut, like Curtis Drummond, Brian Peters, Max Bulloff, who have been on the roster for a few years now, are probably going to cut. And also other guys with some upside potentially, like Steven Anderson, Wendell Williams, Hakeem Hunt, Eric Lee, Rezon Howard, et cetera, that may not make the team, not because necessarily that they don't have potential or aren't good, but just because of the amount of talent on the roster. So are you really just excited for the talent on this team? And I guess when was the last Texas team that you remember to have, you know, this much talent from, you know, top to bottom?
I think it's an average talent-wise. I think it's a very average team. If I were to look at several other teams, they've got a very elite offense. They've got a decent defense. I think this is a team that has a lot of holes. It definitely has a lot of question marks on it. If you're going to go that this is a faster team, then yeah, this is the fastest Texans team we've had. Talent-wise, mm-hmm. I don't see it. I really don't. Where our offensive line got a little worse, our defensive line. We didn't address our defensive line, which I think was a huge issue in the draft. And mm-hmm. now it's coming back to bite us in the ass. So it's a fairly talented team. If I start thinking of truly talented Texans team, I think in 2010, 2011, you had a couple of legit Super Bowl contending teams. I don't see that talent level on this roster. I think it's a solid step below. It's just, yeah, my needs to do some tapas.
Yeah, I think it's the fastest, but I think 2010 is probably the most talented roster they've had. I don't think Akeem Hunt makes the roster, but I think there's a lot more interesting players on this team than we kind of had in the past, where, you know, James Casey was the most interesting player in 2010, for example. And I think this year there's a lot more of these kind of undrafted guys who actually have athletic upside instead of just kind of toolsy guys who could do some things in college and play football, but don't necessarily have the athleticism to be NFL caliber players. And I think that's kind of the biggest difference between now and, you know, 5 years ago. We have a question from Nash Meister.
Yeah, just before we move on, just to get really, really, like, silly on it, just think about the difference between the offensive lines alone between those two teams. And if you're as big of a believer in line play as I am, then you're talking that, you know, left to right, that Brown, Cielo, Martin, Allen, and Derek Newton can remotely stack up to the 2010-2011 rosters of Wayne Brown, the guard I'm forgetting off the top of my head, and
Wade
Chris
Smith.
Myers.
Wade Smith.
Yes, Wade Smith before he got shitty. Chris Myers. I just said the name. Mike Brazell and Eric Winston. That's a far superior offensive line. So just even if you want to get that pedantic about it, like, to me, that's just one shining example of the talent differences, is that we can say, not only is, you know, this is, we're talking Dwayne Brown 6 years ago, not Dwayne Brown today, and that's a big difference in that player mm-hmm. at this point.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so we have this question from Nash Meister. It says, with the exception of quarterback and Watt, at which position do you think the Texans are least prepared to withstand an injury to a starter? Conversely, if a starter had to go down, which position group do you think is deep enough to withstand the loss? And I think this is very important just going back to the defense, like I said earlier, that the Texans added zero NFL caliber defensive players to this roster, and they're just assuming that they're going to be, you know, top 10 again, no matter what. And attrition usually occurs, and especially occurs whenever there's no improvement at all to kind of, you know, bounce back with that, everybody being a year older and injuries happening. And this team kind of is what it is, you know, on defense, and it's not going to change if somebody goes down. I think there's big depth issues, and I think the kind of biggest problem is defensive line. You know, if Watt goes down, you have Wilfork, Covington, Dunn, Devon Still, and Pagan. All those guys are not very good football players, you know. They're all below average. And I just think it's going to be a disaster if Watt doesn't get to play, you know, extended periods of time. But other than him, I think the other position that they'd be really hurt at is, you know, I don't even know. I mean, I guess secondary, but Jonathan Joseph goes down and you're having, you know, A.J. Bouye play extended periods of time in the slot could be an issue. And moving Kareem Jackson on the slot, where he was pretty good last year, is a problem. And I think the position that they will best handle any sort of injury would, I think wide receiver, just because they have so many guys there now and they can do so much more stuff on the ground with Lamar Miller and, you know, Hunt and Urban. And I think this offensive line should be decent enough that they can run the ball and grind out games too. But, I mean, I really am scared defensive line if Watt goes down. I think it's going to be kind of a disaster of a season if Watt only gets to play, you know, seven games or something like that because of this back injury, which is like an apocalyptic scenario too. But,
I think defensive – sorry, go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, you talk.
Don't make me come over there. defensive end was clearly UT is trolling us right now. I think defensive end was the answer to that question because we are whoever's going to compliment JJ Watt on the flip side, you know, because Watt moves. Whoever's going to compliment JJ Watt was already substandard before the draft. It wasn't addressed during the draft. It wasn't addressed during the off season. And so when J.J. Watt went down, we suddenly have two massive gaping black holes of talent at our defensive end positions. And in a 3-4 defense, with the reliance that we've had on the best football player in the universe, that's a freaking deal. And you better have somebody who isn't going to go in there and not embarrass them. So to me, that was the easy answer. So I'll agree with Matt. Where we could most afford an injury, and I'm going to disagree a little bit, is at cornerback. Because if Jonathan Joseph, if Kareem Jackson goes down, you still at least have a legitimate third guy who can play CB1. And Kevin Johnson's just that special. And there are almost no teams in the NFL that can say, hey, you know what, our slot cornerback and, you know, sub packages. He's actually, you know, pretty damn good. You know, you look at what's going on with the Steelers, for example. They've lost a couple of cornerbacks in the offseason, and now they look like a dumpster fire as usual in the backfield. So, our defensive backfield. It's a little bit weird to say, but our quote unquote CB3 is really a CB1 in Wolf's clothing.
Yeah, I forgot about him because he was injured towards the end of last year. Yeah, I mean, I think they would have depth, but I guess it kind of comes to try and pull something out. But I do agree that defensive line is the biggest, you know, issue because it's so bad outside J.J. Watt. And, you know, Vince Wilfork is, you know, terrible. They didn't add anything at all. And you're putting even more pressure on linebackers who, like, you're putting more pressure on Cushing and McKinney, especially in the middle, just so that the outside linebackers force things inside. They aren't the fastest guys, too, and you have to make more plays in space and more plays in front of your face. And then the one behind that is Andre Howell, who's too small to, you know, really make a difference in the run game, and Quinn Demps, who's, you know, really slow. And so I think, you know, they could get Trouts on the ground if Watt misses any time. But yeah, I think if he misses any time, maybe a few games at the beginning of the year, and it may not even be the worst thing concerning the entire season as well. So I guess we'll get to another question from Sacrifice for Team. And do you think DeAndre Hopkins is going to sign an extension this year? Do you think he's going to sign it next year? How do you think the saga is going to end up going out?
I will say, I don't – if I were Rick Smith, Well, if I were Rick Smith, I'd resign in disgrace and never be in the game of football again. If I were Rick Smith, I would not sign him to an extension. There's absolutely no good reason to sign him. And I say that, and then let me add on to that. If I'm Rick Smith, I do a really good deed for my guy, who is going to be pissed off if you don't extend him. And he's already pissed off. And I think that with DeAndre Hopkins, you say, look, because Hopkins, we're going to make an exception for him, and we're going to sign him to this contract. And I think that you do that. You do that to set the goodwill. You do that because you want Hopkins there mentally. I don't think Hopkins is the guy to check out. But you want to. You don't want to set a precedent, so you have to make sure and explain to people, this is an exception. This is a top 3, 4, or 5 wide receiver. We're going to make an exception for Diop, and you do the goodwill thing. So that's what I would do. I don't know if it's going to be done. My guess is no, because he should. That would be what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the whole quarterback thing where you're able to really succeed whenever you draft well, because these guys are such small contracts. And whenever you have to actually pay them, then your salary cap becomes a restriction, and you can't have as much depth as you would before. But I think the main reason why I would sign Hopkins is just in case Brock Osweiler isn't good, then he can't leave after a year or 2 years. So you don't want to. So if you end up hitching your Cowboys to the wrong horse, you want to make sure that he can't get away. And so I think I would sign him early on just so he doesn't change his mind, realize he's going to play in Houston and wants to go play for a team with a real quarterback in case Oswald doesn't work out. And that's kind of the biggest argument for it. Everything else, objectively, as far as the salary cap goes and performance and how good that contract is, you shouldn't sign him at all. But it's just kind of like that fear of Oswald isn't good. You want to make sure that you're able to keep him there. And so the last viewer question I have is from Kid David, and he or she said, I don't know, when do you think our O-line gels as a unit to protect and make the best use of all the shiny tools we bought and drafted in the offseason? So about what week do you think these new additions, Jeff Allen, Martin, and Nsufio starting full-time, how long do you think it's going to take for them to become as good as they're going to be this year?
I, again, being a big fan of continuous gelling offensive line play, it takes more than 1 year. It takes more than one offseason for our offensive line to really come together. You know, always trying to get it for 2 or 3 years. All the way back to the Hogs of the 70s. So we really blew up a lot of that consistency. I have no problem that Ben could get out. But the fact is, Dwayne Brown is no longer an elite left tackle. He is average at best at this point of his career. It's just where he's at. It happens. Suofilo, Martin's a rookie. Jeff Allen's coming in, and he has half a season of solid play under his belt. It's going to be a lot to ask for that offensive line, that group of talent, come together and gel during a season. I don't have high expectations of that happening, but it's certainly possible. But to me, the offensive line went from a strength last season to a weakness this season, just based upon the changing personnel, much less the talent levels.
Yeah, I think that Allen's good enough that he should be able to come in pretty quickly. Dwayne Brown has been that good of a run blocker the last few years, but he still is really good as far as the pass game goes. Newton still has his issues in pass blocking as far as leaning too much. And I think it's just going to kind of depend on Zach Martin and how quickly he's able to work with the double teams, how quickly he's able to, pick up calls and pick up blitzes and help out. And he's a great pass blocker too, so I don't think it's going to take that long. I think it's going to be the biggest thing, just Martin getting used to the speed of the game. And I think that should probably take maybe like 6 weeks or so. And they all stay healthy, and then they'll hit their stride by week 8. But I think it's going to be one of those things where they're not going to be a top – I don't know, potentially be like a top 10 offensive line based on what we saw last year maybe. But it probably won't be any better than that. That's probably the max. I think it's going to take about 6 or 7 weeks or so for them to be kind of gel together as a unit. And I also heard something really interesting too. And I was at the gym. And I was listening to some college football talk show, and they were talking to coaches about how the there's not as many full pad practices anymore and who gets hurt the most from it. And all the coaches around the country in college and NFL said the offensive linemen have the worst. It takes them a lot longer to coach. They're not as technically sound at all anymore because they don't get as many pad practices. And yeah, I think it's very true. And I also think also the way spread offenses have worked in the college game, you're neutering them. They aren't even play the same game in the NFL. It takes longer for college offensive linemen to become what the players that they're going to be too. And so I think it kind of goes back to the NFL where they're not going to have that many pad practices. It's kind of, two new guys, one really young guy too. And so it's going to take a little bit of time. I think it's going to take, 6, 7, 8 weeks or so for them to hit their stride this year.
Well, whatever you do, Matt, just don't ask any of uprooted Texans questions. Just don't.
Yeah, I know they're all making fun of the Houston Texans and how they're going to win the division this year. And how we got both the top trade players that the Houston Astros wanted. I know all that. It's all fine. But it's all good with me. It's all good with me.
Yeah, but he does make a good point that the Seahawks did that with Marshawn Lynch. They gave him an extension during the season, something he didn't do. And then Cam Chancellor held out last year. And of course, Michael Bennett's been throwing a fifth this year. When he's president, you do business differently. Everybody becomes an exception. And you can't do that. And that's a risk. That's why, for all the people who are upset at Rick Smith, and this audience should know better than anybody, I don't like Rick Smith as a GM. I don't blame him. You don't have to do it. I'm really mixed because you want a happy wide receiver. He is, now that we got Lamar Miller, at least, we've got two decent skill position guys on the team. But you don't want to go out and say, here's a contract. I'm not going to extend you till next year. It's a lose-lose proposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, too. Well, that's pretty much all we have. We've been talking for a while. I know the internet's been a little choppy, too. I'm going to try to download the show and see if I can improve the audio at all. I think it's just the internet connection over here because all the, being a Texas Rangers fan and all, look, our internet's bad, I guess, according to Peter Texan. But anyway, I think what we're going to try to do for the next few weeks until the season starts is kind of go through the entire AFC South. And so the way I want to do it is just go through Football Outsiders, go in their order of their projections. And so they projected Jacksonville 6.9 wins. And these are all kind of, they're all very, I guess, moderate. They're not really one way or the other. They're mostly bunched towards the middle. And I think it just kind of shows that the entire AFC South is really bunched together closely in mediocrity. But, yeah, Jacksonville 6.9 wins, then Tennessee is 7.2 wins, Houston is 7.4 wins, and then Indy is 7.8 wins. And so what I like to do is just start from the bottom, work our way to the top. And by the time we're done with the AFC South, the Texans season will start then. So that may even be kind of strange doing a preview on the Colts right before the season starts, but I think it's a good way to do it. And then we'll also preview that game against the Bears too as well to start off the year. The other thing is we're going to try to start a fantasy football league. I'll probably set up this week and then get some invites out for that. And I also talked to the t-shirt people today, and they're supposed to work on some designs. So we may have some Battle Red Blog t-shirts pretty soon. And so as soon as that's all set up, we'll make sure you post and you can buy your friends Christmas presents pretty early on in the year. But, yeah, that's pretty much all I got as far as news goes. And we should be back next Tuesday, and we'll start off the preview talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, and can we get that print on Eddie? I'm asking for him.
Say that one more time.
Can we get that print for the t-shirt on a lace Teddy?
I'll watch some YouTube videos of some Valentine's Day ads and find some companies to send that to for you. Well, thanks for being on again tonight, BFD, and thanks everybody for listening, for all the questions. And if you enjoy the show, to all your friends, we have a new season starting. I'm sure they're lonely in traffic or at their apartment lonely, and they need some Texans podcast to listen to. And so go ahead and tell them to listen to us as well. And if you listen to the show on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review the show, because that's what they say on every podcast I listen to. And so I think that's very important, I guess. And so I just want to reiterate that. But we'll be back next week at the same time, next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central. And during that time, we'll be previewing the Jacksonville Jaguars to start this AFC South preview and get ready for the season, too, as well. And maybe we'll touch on some preseason games and as the previews go along, too, as well. But, again, thanks for listening, everybody. My name is Matt Weston, and thanks for being on tonight, BFD. Thanks for listening to Bell Red Radio.
Woo!
Yeah.